And good evening, everybody, and welcome to peoplesinternetradio.com. Sorry I'm late, folks. I had an awful lot on, and I do apologise for leaving the mic open a little bit earlier. Anyway, straight down to business, seeing as we're an hour delayed starting tonight. I'm delighted to say I have the wonderful Billy Maguire, and indeed the wonderful Chris Fogarty on the line. So, good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Excellent.
And good evening to your listeners, Vincent.
Maybe, Billy, I can just hold you for a moment and just have a quick word with Chris Fogarty. Chris, I don't know if you're aware of what's been happening in Europe and England at the moment with Brexit, as they call it. Are you up to speed on that, what's happening there?
Yes, pretty much so. And I've seen some comments that are pretty into that. In fact, I sent you two, one by Paul Craig Roberts.
Right.
Who claims that the American neocons who set up the European Union in order to have only one group to bribe in their effort to achieve full spectrum dominance, which is actually taking over of the entire Earth and space, that they wanted Britain to remain in so that they would only have to bribe a few people in Brussels instead of maybe 28 different national leaders in Europe.
Wow. So
the purpose of the neocons these times, by the way, is to use European lives and equipment to encircle and threaten Russia, to soften it up for a takeover within. And I think it's very dangerous because they're bringing nuclear weapons forward to the very Russian border. And Russia is liable to respond if its existence is now being threatened by NATO, American-led NATO. And anyway, Paul Craig Roberts claims that the English will not be allowed to secede from Europe under the present situation, that they'll be treated like the Irish. They'll be told to take another referendum.
Well, I have already heard that at the very night when it was announced, essentially, it wasn't actually announced, it was understood, shall we say, that the Brexit situation had indeed been passed. And literally moments later, I was hearing mainstream media announce, well, we're probably going to have another vote, just like the Irish. Billy, maybe you'd like to come in on that.
Yes, Vincent.
Well, you're up to speed, I take it, on what's happening with this Brexit idea.
Oh, I am, and I'd like to read that letter I wrote to David Cameron.
Please do.
The Right Honourable David Cameron, MP, Prime Minister, 10 Downing Street, London, SW1A2AA, UK, and Lee House Cap, as he can, and it's on the Irish Republican Brotherhood, with the sovereign seal there underneath. Dear Prime Minister, your statement that the British people are sovereign is incorrect and has to be corrected. One cannot be sovereign and subject to Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II of England at the same time. Britain's people are subjects to the Crown of England. The Crown is royalty and the sovereign half BC is sovereignty. Britain does not have a sovereign government. Britain has a royal government, royal courts of justice, and a crown force. All sovereignty comes from God. The sovereign half BC that is on the crown of England's British standard is the sovereign republic of Eire's sovereign and national emblem of the state, the sovereign republic of Eire, and is the covenant between God and man with all the information for his planet Earth and our civilization. The sovereign seal, 12 strings, AD, of the Sovereign Republic of Eire is a Celtic Christian symbol and has the two symbols from wrong to right and from evil to good, and is Anno Domini 2016 and has its origin in the book of Genesis in the book of Psalms. Every child is born sovereign and has a God-given right to the first four strings of the sovereign harp you see, earth, air, fire and water. General de Gaulle would not allow Britain to join the EU common market because Britain did not have a sovereign government. It is mandatory to have a sovereign government to sit at the table in the European Parliament. Britain's exit from the European Union will cause great conflict over Britain's sovereignty and will have to be addressed, as it did in 1155 when Pope Adrian IV gave Hibernia, in brackets, Eire, illegally and fraudulently to Henry II, King of England, to found his empire. That's the Bull Laudabiliter. And on the top of the page is the sovereignty of the nation is inalienable, Article 1 of the Sovereign Constitution. Enclosed is the 1916 Proclamation and the Sovereign Constitution, the foundation documents of the state, the Sovereign Republic of Eire, on this, the Irish and Fenian Republican Brotherhood's 100th anniversary of their 1916 rising. Signed and sealed on this day, the 16th of June, Anno Domini, 2016, under the sovereign seal of the Sovereign Republic of Eire, William James McGuire, President of the Irish and Fenian Republican Brotherhood, President of the Sovereign Republic of Eire, President of the Sovereign Republic of Eire, Sovereign Dáil-Éireann Government, Head of State of the Sovereign Republic of Eire, Keeper of the Sovereign Trinity and the Sovereign Seals, AD, and the Sovereign Half BC of the Sovereign Republic of Eire, and is signed and sealed under the Sovereign Seal of the Sovereign Republic of Eire, which is the Sovereign Seal of Dáil-Éireann on the tricolour, and the website is included as well. And I think that spells it out very clearly as to the difference between sovereignty and royalty. And I think it's time all that lies and the deception has come out. And I'd also like to say that this is the Irish Times, Saturday and Sunday, the 7th and 8th of May, 2016. And it's about Enda Kenny. Mr. Kenny, who was elected by 59 votes to 49, with 49 abstentions, said, "It is my great honour to accept the nomination of Dáil-Éireann for the position of Taoiseach." That is a blatant lie, and that's impeachment. And if we're going to start lying and cutting the people again, all our citizens, it's going to lead to disaster. Dáil-Éireann has never sat in Leinster House, and they're the facts. And they brought Michael Noonan out again this week, and he said that, oh, the state was founded in 1922. That's propaganda, lies, and deception. There was no state founded in 1922. What was imposed in 1922, the 6th of December, 1921, King George V, he imposed a British apartheid system for the 26 and 6 counties of Ireland as an Orange Free State and a provisional government. That's what we have in Leinster House today. And I gave the oration at the GPO on Easter Monday, and I said there were five governments in the state, and I named the five governments. I said the British government in Northern Ireland, the six-county government in Stormont, the provisional government here in Leinster House, I said the European government, and the sovereign government, by the will of all the people in the 1918 32-county election, and ratified on the 21st of January 1919 in the Mansion House. That's the sovereign government. We've only one sovereign government, and Enda Kenny and Michael Noonan and the rest of them never once, our 100th anniversary, recognized that sovereign government. And they're lying to the people. And it's time that people stood up and said, it's going to be a disaster. It's lies and deception. And RTE, I wrote to RTE, and they're still at it. It's still propaganda. And I think it's going to have a very adverse... this is not the time to start lying to Europe and everybody else. The only sovereign government I mentioned there about General de Gaulle, I remember all that going on very clearly. Britain could, he would not allow, General de Gaulle wouldn't allow Britain to join. It was the common market at the time, because they didn't have a sovereign government. They have a royal government. And it was our sovereign government of the 21st of January 1919 that Britain got into the common market.
Maybe, Billy, maybe I could just come in there and make a little comment on that, just to explain to people that the difference between, as you say, a government, a sovereign government by, for, and of the people, compared to a royal government. I mean, I know a lot of people understand what, or they believe they understand what royalty is, but essentially what royalty is in the form of a government is, it's a form of a dictatorship, really. It's you do as my bid, or else you lose your head, essentially.
That's it. And you see, we can trace back. I said it. If you go back to what I said about that Pope Adrian IV gave it to Henry II, that Hibernia, Pope Adrian IV was the only English pope, and that was a collusion between himself and Henry II. And that's propaganda, lies, and deception. That's still there and still going on.
Well, apparently that document has been tested. Apparently that papal laudabilitar you're mentioning there has been tested, and seemingly it's a fraudulent document.
Of course it's a fraudulent document. And the point about the whole issue is that, you know, that's where they're claiming their sovereignty from. That caused the Hundred Years' War. And the Crown of England has never, ever claimed that they were the sovereign. Every child is born sovereign. The Crown of England's sovereignty is the very same as every other child in the world. And this thing about their sovereignty, and where sovereignty comes from God. And you can go back to Colossians, go back to the Bible, and go back to everybody should go back and look at the sovereignty of God and the sovereignty of man, and the role of the sovereignty of Christ. And look, look, the Irish Republican Brother, we're not a religious organization, but we respect every bona fide religion. And you can go back to that, and that's Paul in the first century, and you can trace the whole thing. Okay. And the Hebrew people, they lost it. They were, and the Christian people at the time. And that's what, King David and the Star of David, they're all sovereign symbols. And, the Crown of England has never claimed that, because you cannot take the harp to war, and that's a desecration of the sovereignty. The Hebrew people took it, and the Ark of the Covenant, and they have been paying that ever since.
I have a question in for you, Billy. This was actually, it's a two-part thing. It's from Darren. Darren sent something in, and he basically said... Sorry, can you hear me okay, Billy?
Yes, go on.
You know Darren. And he basically asked could he suggest that in the first part that a link to this podcast can be provided to anybody who wants to make any comments with regard to a return to the Commonwealth. Now, these articles have been appearing recently yet again. I think you were aware of them last year, or was it the year before even, calls for a return to the Commonwealth. And he's also saying, could we cover the recent referendum that happened, re-Brexit. But with regard to the Commonwealth rejoining of and so forth, where do you come in on that one, Billy?
Well, we don't. The Irish Republican Brother have, we're not a part of the Commonwealth, nor do we want to become. So the British now, once they were always reluctant to join Europe. They only joined Europe after General de Gaulle died, and they came in under our sovereign government of the 21st of January 1919, because a provisional government cannot sit at the table. And this is where Enda Kenny is going to be in very serious trouble. He's only provisional government, and you can read it yourself in and I'll read it for you. It's so important.
Well, we've heard it say it.
And just those two pieces that you need to read and say, which is when King George V imposed the British apartheid system and the Free State. And the Free State, hold on, I'm just opening the page here. The treaty, there was never a treaty signed here in the States. It was an illegal document in August 1919. On the 21st of January 1919, all the institutions of the state were up and running. You know, the Department of Finance, just to name one, we'll say Michael Collins, he was Minister for Finance. On the 6th of December 1921, he had to step down from the Irish Republican Brotherhood, and he was only Provisional Minister. And Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, they came out of Sinn Féin at the time, and they are not, De Valera stepped down in 1917. Fianna Fáil is not a Republican party. And if you look at 37 Constitution, there's no mention of Republican in it. And the name of the state, De Valera said, is ERA. The name of the state is the Sovereign Republic of ERA. And he left out sovereign, and he left out republic.
And Billy, would De Valera have been aware of that? I mean, I think that's a thing a lot of people...
Of course he was aware of that. I can tell you there was no one more aware of it than De Valera, but he was colluding with the British. And look at what we have suffered ever since. You know, if they're not going to be, if they're going, they're starting now, instead of putting their hands up, and you know, on this year, we weren't invited to one commemoration, although it was the Irish and Fenian Republican Brotherhood who funded and founded the state, the Sovereign Republic of Ira. They're all our symbols. That's our tricolour flag that we put up in 1916 on the GPO. And you know, on Easter Monday, when it's our time at 12 noon, to read our that's our proclamation and our sovereign constitution, the foundation documents of the state, that the provisional government took down, they put up a new flagpole outside the GPO and took it down that we could not raise our tricolour flag. That's the sort of underhanded and deceptive carry-on, which is disgraceful.
I wonder, can I come to Chris there for a second?
Vince, would De Valera have known?
Yes.
Actually, Father Brian Murphy of Glenstall Abbey wrote a book some 15 years ago, Patrick Pearse and the Lost Republican Ideal, and in it he cites exactly when De Valera and when Michael Collins each betrayed Ireland.
And there's a fact, and you're absolutely spot on. And this thing that Fine Gael are a Republican party. Michael Collins, on the 6th of December 1921, had to step down from the Irish Republican Brotherhood, and he was only provisional minister for finance and under the crown, and he accepted the crown. And why aren't people told these facts? You know, we can't, and pretending now at this stage, look at the lies and the deception was told about the banks and about the money. Look at the lies and deception that they're telling now. And last week alone, they had Michael Noonan out twice saying, oh, when the state was founded in 1922. Well, we can tell Michael Noonan, let him prove it now. And I am asking Enda Kenny to prove. I read it out there that he accepted the nomination of Dáil Éireann. Well, let him prove it. Let him prove it to the people that he is Taoiseach of Dáil Éireann. He is not Taoiseach of Dáil Éireann. What he is, and I'm reading from Saoirse Éire, because Bulma Hobson and Kathleen Clark and Dermot Lynch and all those people taught me, and I have great respect for those. The treaty provided for the setting up in Ireland of a provisional government, and that's in black and white. And why can't they tell the truth about it? It's so serious now that you and your children and your grandchildren will have nothing. And we have a wonderful country. And I'll just read this part for you. Anybody can read that because you have they're up on the website on Billy Brown, I'm told, anyway. Mm-hmm. And here we are on page on Saoirse Éire. We have, the first necessity provided of the Constitution. This is the Free State Constitution. On this recognition of the establishment of a legislature. It is called the Oireachtas and consists of the King, Dáil Éireann, and Senate Éireann. You know, there it is in black and white. And what is
You see, this is the problem, Billy. And people don't realise, or for some reason, people seem to think that somehow that was done away with. And I've even said to a lot of people, exactly where and when was that done away with, please? Can you show me? And of course, nobody can. There's another thing, and I just wanted to bring Chris in on this as well, if you don't mind. I don't know if you're aware, Chris, as well, that now because of the Brexit vote, seemingly, there are suggestions that, quite strong suggestions, that a border poll should be carried out to see if a united Ireland can be formed under these circumstances. Personally, I think that if that were to happen at this time, I would consider it very bad timing, and I think it would cause an awful lot of issues, but I just wonder where you came in on that.
Well, it is mighty interesting. One has to ask, what are the loyalists loyal to? They, up until now, they have been loyal to the force that kept them in power, and that is the British Army, run from London. But if England is out, and the six counties in Scotland are in, will they then transfer their loyalty to Scotland?
To Brussels? It does. It begs the question.
Or Brussels? Yes, it could go the other way. Indeed, Brussels. Indeed, yes, yes. So, what are the loyalists loyal to? And that is the question now. that so far their muscle has come from London. That they say the people with the guns and the killing equipment have been ordered by London. There's a question as to whether that will continue now.
You see, I'm totally confounded and confused by a lot of this because, I can understand the way, absolutely I can understand the way people feel on all sides, to be honest. I think I have a fair understanding of how everybody feels because this is a historical event. It caused great hardship for our great grandparents and probably even our grandparents. It's causing intellectual difficulties for a lot of us today. We have a false history in our books on all sides, yeah. I think on all sides, there's a false history. And there's a manipulated history, and there's a manipulated, propagandized false history, which, of course, is always an extremely dangerous thing.
Yeah, may I suggest that in between 1900 and 1910, when the British landlords, who owned over 95% of the land of Ireland, were bought out and repatriated to England, that the job was not finished. Their cousins who owned the banks, the insurance companies, the advertising agencies, etc., remain, and that worse, the news media, remain in place to this very day. And that is part of the problem. So it's not only that the international banksters came in and somehow got control of the Irish government, of Ireland, through the corrupt Irish government, but they had been partly controlled by the ascendancy up until recently, until the international banksters took over Ireland. It had been run, in any event, by the ascendancy bankers.
Absolutely. In fairness, I would also suggest that almost every country now on the planet has fallen afoul of these international bankers. And you correctly say the number of media companies who own all the other media companies now, it's getting close to being able to count them on one hand. Which, and that's internationally, globally. I think that's a real bad idea to have so few companies responsible for the media diet, if you will, of such large swathes of population. And because of that, as you say, they're all funded by the banks. And everybody has their hands in everybody else's pockets. But somebody is at the top. Somebody is putting their hands in their own pockets at the top and controlling all the others.
And indeed, that is the picture. So it's time for the people to take their governments back. We don't like Trump in the United States. And I must say, the United States Americans can no longer adopt a superior attitude toward any other nation because our government has also been bribed away from us by the international banksters.
I think that, absolutely. I mean, I think that was the first demonstration of that, I believe, a public demonstration of how serious they were was Kennedy's assassination.
Yes.
And things haven't improved since, from what I can tell, other than everybody who seems to be getting, inverted commas, elected, more like selected.
Yes.
Yeah, and I realize this sounds like a conspiracy theory of sorts, but really, when you look at it with logic and reason, I fail how you could fail to see so. Because, the people who are being offered to us as our so-called choices, they're not what I would consider, and I don't think anybody would consider these, righteous, upstanding, dignified people. They all, no matter who they are, they all seem to have spurious skeletons in their collective closets. They all have supposedly different agendas, yet if you study them, from what I can tell, they all have exactly the same agenda. Less power for the people, more power to their respective governments, regardless of what nation we're talking about here, and concentration and centralized power, even if it spreads over multiple nations. That seems to be the way it's going. Now, there was a time that was called the New World Order, and you were considered a tinfoil-wearing nut job if you considered such ideas in your mind. Now it seems to be so blatantly obvious, I don't know how you couldn't see it.
That's where we are. And you might also notice that while we always must avoid xenophobia and anti-Semitism, there is a very, very strong Israeli current running through the crime of the world these days. The United States Congress last year had the greatest number of standing ovations in its history since 1776. And it was not for a scientist. It was not for an entrepreneur. It wasn't for a saint. It wasn't for a great past president. It was for the president, not Netanyahu, of Israel.
Wow. Oh, okay.
That is a shocking fact. The greatest number of standing ovations in the history of the U.S. Congress.
And was this after he had given speeches or something? Or
yeah, he came to address the Congress in order to try to put down Obama. Obama was not going along 100% with the Israeli genocide of the Palestinians, and he went there to subvert Obama. And he had the Congress was like a jack in the box, up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down for the hour or so that he spoke. In other words, and on that day, they set a new record, the greatest number of standing ovations in the history of the United States Congress. And it was for a foreigner. And worse than that, it was for a foreign war criminal, a genocidist. But they are merely, they stood up and they applauded in fear because they have all been bought.
Well,
they've been bought by pro-Israeli Jews in America.
Well, as I look at the bad conduct which we're seeing regularly on the internet, videos of cops in America, literally deranged, out of control, megalomaniacs, hurting, maiming, and killing people, literally killing them on video, and then getting away with it, which is the bizarre part.
Yes.
You know, the American people themselves have to be asking these questions. What the hell is going on?
Cameras have changed everything. They were getting away with it 100%. Now they're getting away with it 95%. But the 5% is bound to grow as cameras go more and more into operation. But Mary and I, my wife and I, have always known it. And the cops in Chicago are 100% in support of any war that is created by our war criminals, by our neocons. And anyone who opposes war are treated like, well, they're treated like African Americans. The beauty of being white-skinned in Chicago is that I was treated like a black when I would put up my sign opposing war and opposing corruption that lead us to war. But as soon as I take my sign now, my placard down, I'm white again, and the cops have respect. But they treat me like an African American while I'm carrying the anti-war sign.
Wow.
And often arrest me, abuse me, beat me up, handcuff me, but never show up in court on the day of the hearing because they know they're wrong. They're criminals. They're criminals operating for the 1%.
But you see, I think the main thing is here is that because a broader section of the population are starting to see it now, I wonder what's the effect in the public psyche, as it were, as opposed to, I know it's very difficult for somebody who, as you've just described, who feels they've been abused and physically assaulted, etc., by supposed members of the establishment, and particularly law and order. We've seen it here in Ireland as well. I'm sure many a British man has seen it in England, and Scotsman has seen it in Scotland, and so forth. I'm finding that individuals' reactions, who've never had anything to do with the guards or the police constables before, they practically go into some type of post-traumatic stress reaction. But now what's happening with the cameras, as you correctly say, is it's happening that even though you may or not have experienced it as an individual, somebody relating the story to you is one thing, but to actually see the video and to hear what's happening. I mean, I've seen some of these videos and you can hear batons striking the, you know, elbows and knees and bones, and you can hear their bones breaking, some of them. You can see them getting shot. You can see blood. I mean, it's pretty horrific. And I wonder, like, what's the effect, Chris, overall on the psyche of the population in general? Or are you noticing it? Are you seeing anything? Are you hearing anything? You know, or is it just being accepted? I mean, what's the...
Well, we might have our opinions, but I think better to go by what the polls are showing. And Trump in America represents the people who are fed up with government corruption. The problem with it also includes the xenophobes, the racists, but truly the people who know that the government has gone too far and are no longer representing the people. The Trump supporters includes everyone who knows that the government is operating for the 1% and against the people.
Isn't it a case, though, that generally anybody who looks like they're starting to make waves, particularly if the wave is not going the direction it was intended, that, you know, these xenophobic supporters seemingly can be pulled out of a magician's hat at will, placed in various locations and, you know, certain talks and positions, etc.
Indeed,
and
yes.
Suddenly, the candidate gets labeled with being associated with these, whether they are or not.
Yeah, they're false flags. That is actually happening here in the Trump campaign.
I mean, I'm not suggesting he's not.
The Trump campaign is that it also does include xenophobes and racists.
But this is what I'm asking. I mean, you know, I mean, we've seen it here. I mean, I saw it here in an interview the great Ben Gilroy did with a radio station here in Ireland, and he literally did basically accuse him of being xenophobic, racist, etc. And Ben didn't actually, and sorry if I'm embarrassing you, Ben, but at the time, Ben didn't actually know what the word xenophobic meant at the time. So he didn't react appropriately to the comment. And it was only afterwards when he rang me and he said, what the hell was xenophobic? And I explained it to him. You know, let's just say he was keen to talk to that guy again.
Yeah.
Billy, are you still there?
I am
yeah,
indeed.
Sorry,
I'm listening.
I don't mean to leave you. I don't mean to cut you out. It's hard sometimes to have two a conversation with two such great men at the same time.
It's great to hear, Chris, and it's great to hear. No, but what I'm going, me, you know, the Irish Republican Brother, we're not a political party, as you know, and we only do the sovereignty and the legitimacy of the state. And you know, Dáil-Éireann, you know, it was funded. The rising was very important, but it wasn't the end. It was only the beginning of setting up a sovereign government. And that sovereign government, by the will of all the people, that cannot be dissolved by anybody until the destruction of the Irish people. And I think it's awful to see we have a sovereign government. Whilst we're asking Enda Kenny and Michael Noonan and the rest of those who are claiming that they're members of Dáil-Éireann, they're not members of Dáil-Éireann, is to honour that sovereign government by the will of all the people of the 32 counties. And I have a letter that I'm writing to, and I would like people to just hear it and to come in on that letter and give their points on it, because that's what the Irish Republican do it on behalf of the people.
And people can email through to your website, Billy, BillyMaguire.com. They can email through their suggestions.
Yeah, but anyway, Arlene Foster, who is the first, and I have a letter that I'm going to write to her, and I'm going to include the one that I wrote to David Cameron. But anyway, it is you, this is to the First Minister, you and the sovereign citizens of Ulster, Antrim, Armagh, down Tyrone, Fermanagh and Derry.
There's more to Ulster than that.
Sorry?
There's more to Ulster than six.
I do agree with you, I know, but I'm specifically on this point, that you have a sovereign right to be in the European Union and sit at the table in the European Parliament as a sovereign citizens of the Sovereign Republic of Éire. That right was established by the will of all the people-citizens of Éire in the 1918 32 county election from GHU, Vaughan Hotel, Dublin, and ratified in the Mansion House, Dublin, on the 21st of the 1st, 1919. The sovereign Dáil-Éireann government, elected by the will of all the citizens of Éire, can never be dissolved except by the destruction of the Irish people. And I have all sovereignty comes from God. Every child is born sovereign and has a God-given right to the first four strings of the sovereign heart, we see, earth, air, fire, and water. And Aileen Foster, she has that right to sit at the table in Europe as a sovereign citizen of the 32 county election of 1918. That's what they voted for. And, you know, this thing, you know, the farmers in here, never mind in the six counties, they're broke. And Britain is never going to, those subsidies that come from Europe, they're not going to be given to, they are not going to give them those subsidies and that. And they have a way out. They have a wonderful way out. And they have elected that. That was the 1918-32 county election. And all we're asking, in the 100th anniversary of the Rising, that the sovereign government will be implemented and respected by all the citizens of the 32 counties. We are not a political party. We just hold the sovereignty and the legitimacy of the state. And the six counties have that. And the proclamation, I'm going to include the proclamation of the sovereign constitution when I sent it for it this week. And
The main obstruction to Irish freedom are the two main newspapers, the Independent and the Times, and Radio Éireann, RTE.
Until that they're replaced,
how Ireland cannot be free. I don't see how it can be.
And the propaganda, I mean, to have the likes of Michael Noonan on all this week and he talking about, oh, when the state was founded in 1922. And I've just read out that there was no state founded in 1922.
Well, I think it's even...
The people don't know that because all they know is what they've been fed from the Independent, the Times, and the RTE.
I've actually suggested here many a time that, indeed, that when people do protest, that they're protesting outside the wrong door. They should be protesting, in my mind, outside of RTE, outside of independent newspapers, so-called, etc. That's right. Where their protest should be, because they're literally at the wrong building.
Yes, that's where the corruption is.
Yeah.
That's an excellent... And I have written, as you know, to Curran, I know he's retired now, about RTE. They never once, you know, the 100th anniversary, and they made all those documentaries. Some of them were very nice and that. But they're not factually correct. I mean, they never once contacted the Irish or Fenian Republican Brotherhood. They never once looked for the sovereign for all the Vaughan Sertel papers, which are all the documents. I mean, how can you do all those documents and all those documentaries without the facts?
By the way, do either of you know of History Ireland?
We do.
Are you familiar with? Well, I just saw where someone reprinted one done some 7 or 8 years ago in which the entire slavery system through the 18 and 1900s was created by Irish slavers. It is bizarre.
Really?
I read the whole thing just yesterday in History Ireland. It is a stunning piece of history falsification.
Well, that doesn't surprise me, Chris. I mean, believe it or not, you know, Irish children are still being taught in schools that a famine occurred on this land.
It's still going on in the schools, is it?
It's still ongoing. And Gilroy, for example, he was talking to his young child about the situation, and he sat them down at the table and he said, "Now, look, there's your dinner. Now, if I just took the potatoes off your plate, would you starve?" And the child said, No, Daddy, I wouldn't. And he said, "Well, then, isn't that what they said, that everybody starved just because there was no potatoes?" And they said, "Yeah." And he said,
"That's right.
Why were the people not eating everything else?" And the child was, you know, but the child understood. And I think, you know, when it's that brazen, when you have to do something that, you know, of that nature to demonstrate to your own young child, your own young flesh and blood, that's how much of a deception is going on in what they believe to be their school, their education, you know, because a child has a trust position with a school, you know, they're supposed to be able to trust the information that's being passed to them. And that child can no longer look at their teacher and think that they're trustworthy. I think that's a horrible, I think it's a disgraceful thing. And I think it's terrible that school teachers need to start addressing
this. The brother that taught me in Castlereagh, County Roscommon, a Marist brother, a wonderful, dedicated man in all other respects, after he retired, he admitted having deceived his students his entire 50-year teaching career by referring to famine and by covering up the British Army removal of the food.
Only
for you, I mean, that book that you have written, you know, how important that book. And Tom McGrath has written another one to follow on from your one. And it is a brilliant book as well, giving all the facts of what happened. That's all we want. It's all this sort of propaganda, lies, and deception. And I mean, when you see these are only provisional ministers going in and RTE, you know, oh yes, and those programs in the morning, that Sean O'Rourke program, and he comes up, oh, the minister, I have on the minister. Why doesn't he call him provisional minister? Why can't they tell the truth?
Well, of course. You know, what I'm still seeing, Billy, regularly, is that RTE in particular, along with Peters, I suppose, but they keep using the term law for legislation, and those two terms are not interchangeable. People have been led to believe that the word law is synonymous with legislation, and in fact they are not synonymous with each other. They are completely separate. Law is, for example, the law of nature, it's the law of gravity, the law of light and shade, etc. Legislation is man-made legislation. It's acts and statutes, and if they are being imposed upon you and you have no choice, then in fact you are being enslaved. And I've often used this as an argument for people. I've said, if what defines slavery, and for example for the black American, Afro-American people, it essentially was 100% of their production was being removed from them. And the question I would ask is, at what percentage does it cease to be slavery if it's forced? Yeah. You see, and it literally does not. You can't, if you are forcibly removing from the people of Earth the production, even if it's only 1% or a fraction of a percent, if you are doing so using force, you are by definition enslaving those people.
But isn't that what the Crown of England did here from the very beginning? All that landlord system was set up to that it would take all the assets of the state.
Well, I think we have to realise that they did exactly the same thing to their people, you know, supposedly their people. I mean, the people of England, Wales and Scotland were equally as enslaved. I mean, they even have it's a disgrace to refer to another living human being as a subject. And not,
yeah, mind you,
to recognize.
That, while that's true, it wasn't nearly as bad in England as the English landlords in Ireland made it in Ireland. William Cobbett, member of Parliament, visited Ireland in the 1830s, and he wrote letters back to England, and there's a book published of his letters, and the title of the book is Cobbett in Ireland: A Warning to England, that the conditions of extermination in Ireland in the 1830s would be brought to England if the English people did not organize against it.
Yeah, and I mean, there were large swathes of the population on English soil that died too of potato blight conditions brought about in their households too. They were dispossessed and evicted and all of that as well. Not to the same degree, of course, as happened on this land, but it still happened. And what I find the most despicable, I mean, all that behaviour is, of course, despicable and horrific. But what I find even more despicable in some regards is the intellectual dishonesty of raising another human being to believe a lie, and that which is that somehow they are less than another. And that essentially is when man, and my feeling is, I mean, that's why I always liked Billy's message, and your message too, Chris, for this reason, is that, you know, once we recognize each other as actual equals, I mean, that is literally the problem humanity is suffering from. It's a delusion to believe somehow another man or woman can be above you.
Yes.
Or below you, for that matter.
Yes, well, the very notion, as you can think, of full spectrum dominance, again, that is the conquest of all of Earth and space by these neocons, and that's their plan, and that's what the European Union is about, and that's what NATO is about, and that's what the encirclement of China and Russia are all about. This is an attempt to take over. So imagine the self-regard of these one percenters, of these neocons, who have planned this and are putting it into operation.
Well, if I were to stand back and say, it seems to me not only do they want to control the populations, as I think that's obvious, but it's the methodology of control is almost like they despise them.
Yes, of course. Well, if they kill them, and they do, then that speaks for itself.
Hmm. The suggestions that have been put forward in the past by others claiming that, you know, well, that those in charge, as it were, these ruling elites, as you call them, or the controlling elites, I suppose, is a better description, because they don't actually rule people. They literally control them. They control their mind. And they do
I don't like to call them elite, though. Elite is a misnomer.
That's exactly.
We should stop using they're the opposite of elite. They're criminals.
That's exactly where I was going, because I hate that terminology. And I think it's about time people started to change the terminology, I believe, for the correct terminology. And I even don't believe that the term psychopath is correct. I don't even think that's correct or good enough. I don't think it's a sufficient term. I think they should be called sociopathic narcissistic psychopaths, because that fits like a glove.
Yes, that's where we are. Yes.
And the only thing that's going to break that cycle, as far as I can tell, for humanity is... First, very simple, and that the first part of it is the recognition of each other as worthy. You know, for how many years have Irish people and English people, and etc., stood up in churches, for example, and repeated the phrase, I am not worthy to receive. But are worthy. We are worthy of one another, at the very least. We are definitely worthy of one another, and we are all worthy of feeding and healthcare and nurturing and literally being cherished by each other. And our failure as a species to not realize this is, I find it so absurd, because at the same time, there are so many people out there who seem to, in their ordinary life, give the illusion that they believe everybody should be free and that they believe nobody should be oppressed. And yet, when they're participating in these so-called elections that are happening, they are literally passing a vote to another. And even if they lose, they are still giving credence to that system of oppression. And I find it bizarre. I really do.
Yes, that's where we are. The notion that in any war, you count the tragic fatalities only on your side.
Yeah.
The deaths on the other side make no difference whatever.
Yeah.
That is shocking.
It is, because, I saw a very good definition of war on Facebook there recently. Facebook does have its uses. And it was essentially poor people killing other poor people they don't know on behalf of rich people they'll never know, and the rich people don't kill anybody.
Yeah.
And they don't get killed by extension. And
yes.
that is war, is, you know, essentially... just strangers massacring each other for, and all, it's because they've soaked up the lies, the propaganda and the deception, and they do it for king and country, or for the green fields of France, or wherever it might be.
Yes.
And yet it's never worked out that way. You know, when are we going to see en masse that it's never ever worked out that way? All revolutions, as far as I can tell, genuine revolutions that have happened anywhere on the planet, all seem to have been revolutions seeking a republic. I've never seen a revolution, I mean, even the American Revolution, it wasn't for democracy, it was for a republic.
Yes.
And as I studied the papers of all those at the time, the so-called founding fathers, essentially they described a sovereign republic where the people themselves could say, you know, they could, in a sovereign republic, essentially you can peacefully walk away from legislation if you feel it's going to oppress you.
Yes.
And if any member of your society is oppressed, that your whole structure has failed or somebody has committed treason. And it is literally that simple.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've often wondered, you know, I've tried to find books that could describe this and explain this, and I've yet to find one. There were some interesting philosophers who've down through the years tried to explain this to people, and they have their philosophies tainted and twisted, but the New Age movement in particular seemed to be focused on altering everybody's perception of what the great philosophers were actually saying to us.
But Vincent...
Yes.
And Chris, you know, I always ask Americans, where do you get your sovereignty from? And I've asked, you know, educated Americans and, you know, political Americans that were, but no one, because, and as far as I'm I know, they get it from the Crown of England. And the Crown of England regards America as their subjects.
Well, they regard it as a colony still, Billy. I mean, there's a video on YouTube when herself was visiting Canada. And at one stage during her speech, talk, whatever you want to call it, she announced to the very large, packed room of very wealthy individuals, by the looks of things, she announced to them all, she said, "I am your queen." And the way she said it, and you could have heard a pin drop for a moment in that room, and then somebody clearly hit somebody an elbow, and an awkward clap began, and then rose slightly, but it didn't really, you know, it wasn't an enthusiastic applause, you know. But she, when she went over there, she was very firmly putting her finger on their pulse and saying, "Now, now, I am your queen." And so I've yet to hear the Americans address that
land,
issue. That
crown land, it's not sovereign land, it's crown land.
That's why I'm always saying
that nobody seems to distinguish between sovereignty and royalty. And royalty is only pomp and ceremony of no consequence. You can dress yourself up with all the jewels in the world you've got, but that's not sovereignty. And right. Every child is born sovereign, and the Queen has the same, or any crown has the same sovereignty as every other child in the world. And you can go back on that as far as you like.
The logic, Billy, that I look at this and I say, okay, so let's say, for example, I'm trying to teach my child about royalty and sovereignty. Let's say I have this theoretical child and they say, "Well, Daddy, see the king or queen over there? They claim to be sovereign and yet they also claim to be royalty. What's that about?" And I think I would be able to successfully explain to that child that the logic that they are using as royalty, if you will, claiming to be the only sovereign, because that's what they actually claim to be, the only sovereign.
Yes.
And that's flawed logic, because either a man or a woman is capable of sovereignty or they are not. And if one is, all are.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the point we make.
Yes.
And that is what we say. And that's why we want our sovereign government. And if we had our sovereign government in this state, Sovereign Republic of Ireland, what a wonderful country we'd have. And accountability to the sovereign citizens every year. And you'd be told how much money or whatever the assets of the state are worth and what you're worth and what you can do.
Well, in theory, Billy, that absolutely, because essentially that happens for, as we know, for so many of the royals across the planet. I mean, I hate to keep focusing everything just on the crown, because there are other royal families out there. There's the Dutch royals, etc. The Spanish royal. Are the Spanish royals still going there, aren't they?
They are.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, there are other royalties out there, and yet they all share this idea that somehow, I'd really love to have a conversation one-on-one with them to see, do they actually really believe their own line of, excuse me for using an expletive, bullshit? I wonder, do they really believe it themselves?
I doubt it, but they know they have a good thing, so they try to keep promoting it.
Yeah,
they got the people for a long time to believe that it was that their power came from God. That they were specially endowed
with
the divine right of kings.
Absolutely. And you see, well, from my understanding of what happened in, supposedly with the 1155, Pope Aidan IV, papal laudabliter, was that essentially they were being told, well, God is the only sovereign, and we're claiming basically to be the vicar of Christ, and therefore, yeah, you know, you hand over the crown to us, and, we'll grant the crown back to you. For Peter's penny. I don't know if you've ever heard about Peter's penny.
That's the annual collection taken up throughout Christendom. In Ireland. And it was the return of the Peter's pence to Rome instead of Armagh. Yes. That was the price of the laudabiliterae.
Yes. Now, seemingly, because again, some of my research, and I'm going to say this is my research, folks, so it's open to correction. Or other opinions, but I found an article that was saying that the crown was handed over and then it was essentially rented back from Rome. Have you come across that one, Billy or Chris?
Well, I think 1155 is the real when, I mean, that was, I mean, Pope Adrian IV, the English Pope, and Henry II, asking of England. I mean, that was a total collusion. And that caused the Hundred Years' War. And if you look at all the wars, always it's the crown of these countries go to war. And they, all these people who they call subjects and slavery, I mean, the Roman Empire was based on slavery. And that's what it ends up with.
Well, I probably shouldn't mention it, but I mean, there's a fantastic, it's actually a fantastically well made, it's a TV series, but it could practically be a documentary on television called Game of Thrones. Are you aware of that, Billy or Chris?
No, I wouldn't.
I know of it, but I don't watch it. Right, but should I? I should.
Well, you should probably have a little look, because essentially what it describes is that these large families, they're all basically after the Iron Throne, to unite all the kingdoms, but with one ruler at the top of the Iron Throne, you know, if that rings any bells. And they are literally cutthroat, murdering, sociopathic, narcissistic psychopaths. And yet, you know, through the film, or through the series, the viewer essentially is it's propagandized to make the viewer emote positively and negatively for the royals in this whole affair. And yet, basically to ignore the hundreds and thousands being slaughtered on the battlefield at their whims. And again, this is what humanity is doing to each other in real life. We ignore the bodies strewn across battlefields, and we look to hear what's the victor, supposed propaganda, newspaper, radio, TV tells us, this is the victor. Let's hear what the victor has to say. And somehow ignore or hear them explain away the devastation. I heard it there when somebody was explaining, you know, why the atomic bombs supposedly had to be dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And the explanation was so bizarre, I'll never forget it. But it was an attempt to justify by claiming, well, if we didn't do that, such and such a thing would have happened. And that would have been somehow worse. And we've no way of knowing that for a start, because A, they dropped those bombs, apparently. But this idea that, you know, it's okay to chop off your neighbor's hand because he might strike you. I mean, where do we draw that line?
Yeah.
But that effectively is what they're doing, these so-called preemptive strikes. You know, my neighbor's bigger than me. Should I sneak up behind him and take him out because he's bigger than me and he might be able to take me out? You know, I think there's lessons for humanity in all of this. And I mean, that's why I'm delighted both of you were on tonight, because it is the lesson for humanity that we really need to focus on. Because People's Internet Radio is all about seeking solutions, Chris and Billy, as you well know. And again, that's why I've always admired both of you, because one, your book about the so-called famine, it really, really hammers it home. If somebody has any doubts in their mind whatsoever, it absolutely hammers home that there's no way you can even remotely begin to describe that situation as a famine.
Yeah, the facts speak for themselves. Yes.
They scream, Chris. They absolutely scream. And then with regard to Billy and Billy's information that he's presented to us down through the years, you know, again, these facts speak for themselves. It's prima facie evidence of there is an absolute crime being committed against humanity, and it's being committed by a group we all know very well. We have them in our homes. We have them in our living rooms. We're purchasing their articles in newspapers, magazines, and we're watching and listening to them on radio and television. We are paying for this. It's bizarre.
All the time. But Vincent, the one thing that really has upset me, as you know, the Vaughan's Hotel, which my family bought, on behalf of the Irish and Fenian Republican Brother Common Amman, the Fenian, that's where the state was founded, and the University of Limerick. And as you know, I gave all the Vaughan's Hotel papers to that university. They don't even know what they've done with them, and they don't care either. And but what really upsetting me is that, you know, the Queen's visit here, which they regard as a great success, and it was predicated on the truth coming out, a truth commission coming out. And as you know, Chuck Feeney, he put up all that money. The University of Limerick is an Irish Republican Brotherhood university, and it was for younger people to get a work ethos rather than academia. And you're talking about 1950 when they were talking about it. And there was nobody thinking of computers and all the modern technology we have today. But the Irish Republican Brotherhood was. And it was a university for Limerick, Clare and Tipperary. And the peace, reconciliation and prosperity process was there in Willibank and it was going on. That's how I got to know all that. And I mean, Hayes McCoy, I used to bring down those boxes when he was doing the all that research on the flags and all that for him. And, I met all those people there. But what really upset me with the whole thing is the Earl of Hankton and Archbishop Ian, the Presbyterian people, they took their seats in the House of Lords. And it took 10 years to get permission from the Irish Republican Brotherhood for the Queen to come here and lay the wreath in the Garden of Remembrance. As you know, this reason is there because Vaughan Sertel looks out onto the Garden of Remembrance. And it's great that Bartle D'Arcy has opened up the tunnels to Vaughan Sertel. We would not have bought Vaughan Sertel without those tunnels because we couldn't have won the 1918-32 county election from Vaughan Sertel. We couldn't have, and Ogden Heron won the War of Independence. And all those tunnels, that's how they were using the jug of the printing press. That was all down there. But anyway, that was all predicated on, and I've said it so many times, you can't understand the 1916 rising without understanding that in 1912, Sir Edward Carson founded the Ulster Volunteers, and in 1913, they became the UVF Army, because Guinnesses gave 100,000, Lord Rothschild gave 100,000, and Rupert Kipling gave £50,000 to buy those top-class German guns, and Britain colluded with that. And as a consequence of that, the intelligence officers of the Irish Republican Brotherhood reported to the executive of the Supreme Council what happened, and they founded the Irish Volunteers and the Irish Citizens Army as a defence force. And in 1913, at the Rotunda, you know, where those tunnels now have been all opened up, and if you go back to Foley Street and you go back to Bill Shanahan's pub, those tunnels were all interconnection to Vaughan Sertel. And that's how they had to achieve it. But the point that I'm making about the whole thing, the Queen's visit was predicated on all a troop commission coming out with all that information being made available to the citizens, all the Vaughan Sertel papers. That's why I gave them to the university that they'd be safe. And instead of that, as you know, the peace, reconciliation and prosperity process was founded in Willibank at that time, which is now part of the university. And Willibank, they've got it, Willibank, and they got rid of all the Vaughan Sertel papers and everything else. They took them away. I don't think they destroyed them because the man who took it down was Tom O'Connors. And he told me they took three furniture van loads of Vaughan Sertel papers and memorabilia and the printing presses and all the talk of the printing presses and Collins bicycles and all that memorabilia away. And what have they done with them? They won't answer anybody. But the peace, reconciliation and prosperity process.
See, nobody knows this, Billy. And you see, this is the thing. See, when you come on here and you say this to us, you see, again, I'm not referring to anybody in particular in the chat box here, but I do get people asking me, say, hey, Vin, Billy Maguire said such and such a thing on your on a radio interview with you. Can you back that up? Can you prove it, etc.? And I tell everybody, no, I can't. But you can talk to Billy Maguire if you will. And I've given plenty of people, as you know, your phone number as they've requested it. I don't know if you want people to have your phone number now or not. It's your.
Well, the point I'm saying is that the Queen's visit was predicated on the peace, reconciliation, and prosperity process. And all that information coming out. The reason what Vaughan Sertel, that Chuck Feeney put up the money to buy Vaughan Sertel, and he was going to have his office in the place, and is so important, is that on the 6th of December 1921, when the so-called British apartheid system was in Vaughan Sertel, and Kathleen Clark told me that Tom Clark was the president of the Irish Republican Brotherhood and Padraig Pearce was the president of the Irish Republican Brotherhood's Ogden Aherne, and that Ogden Aherne were given the mandate to protect the sovereignty of the state, the 32 county election of 1918, and to protect the what they had achieved. And the only place that the IRA could say that the war is over was in Vaughan's Hotel. And they got it. Hugh Coveney got it, Vaughan's Hotel, on the instruction.
Well, again, and that speaks volumes. I mean, what I would suggest is that the only thing that can really bring mankind to a place of peace, reconciliation in any regard, is firstly that we recognise and acknowledge that we've all been fed lies. I mean, I had a real difficult time with this, Billy, realising how many lies I had taken into my mind and assumed and presumed them to be legitimate reasons and ideas.
Factually correct. And
they weren't. And when I, for example, as I became very interested in Indian art, culture, and literature, etc., and many, many years ago, I started to read the likes of the Mahabharata, and I was watching, remade programs about it, and I started to look into
Geary, President Geary.
Oh, no, I'm going like 1,000 years before that, right? I became interested in Vedic mathematics and, all the different aspects of the culture. And then as I came forward through the years and I started to find out about the so-called Indian famines, where millions and 10 million in one go, apparently. And again, it was being put down to a famine. And they were not famines. They were orchestrated population culls is what they were. To the tune of probably on the whole Indian continent, or, I don't know if it's a continent, but the whole landmass of India at the time, up to somewhere, the figures I've seen have gone from 40 million upwards.
Yeah. But the genocide started happening only under British control.
Yeah, what would happen seemingly was that the East India Company would get a local Raj on board, probably by bribing or whatever, and that the local people used to give tithe a portion of their grain, etc., to the Raj, and the idea was that he would store it for bad times, and that the people could claim it back in bad times, and that's what happened. But then all of a sudden, when the East India Company came around, they start taking the tithe, but the Raj was still supposedly in power, but he wasn't really, he was now a puppet Raj. And the East India Company began to just take that grain, etc. And then when a bad situation arrived and a drought, etc. came along, suddenly the people went looking for their grain back from the Raj, and they had to have the news broke to them. No, the East India Company's had it, and they've been taking it for years, and in fact they're still taking it, and by the way, you still owe it.
Yes.
And they died by their million.
But Vincent, what the point I was making there about the Crown's visit to Ireland, which was very successful in the Crown's point of view, but it was predicated on that Truth Commission coming out. And what did they do? They scrapped the peace, reconciliation, and prosperity process, which I brought up to about Vaughan's Hotel, and they gutted Vaughan's Hotel. And they replaced it with the Good Friday Agreement.
Well, there's now fear-mongering. There's now fear-mongering going on in the media, Billy. I've seen it already, that, oh, because of Brexit now, the peace process is going to break down in Northern Ireland and all of this stuff. And, I actually don't think it is, because I hope the people of North and South, East and West, I think the people of Ireland have enjoyed living peacefully over the last, number of years. And I don't think the people themselves want to go back to that. And I think the people themselves are going to be more difficult to propagandize, for at least I hope so, from now on, particularly with the advent of the internet, that now people can actually see things and search and seek things from their living room, and they can become much better informed. I mean, this is the information age. And as I said to you many a time, you've rang me and you've basically said, can this information or this perspective that you've put out on people's internet radio down through the years, and Chris Fogarty and many, many others, can it be blocked or removed? And I've said to you regularly, no, it absolutely cannot. I couldn't remove it if I tried. It's out there and it's stayed. Well, you see, this is what happens with the internet.
It's important to also know that all of the main atrocities, from Bloody Sunday to Ballymurphy massacre to the McGurk's Pub massacre to Lochan Island to Omagh, all were the Dublin Monaghan bombings, all of the major atrocities, the perpetrators still remain in office and or else on pension. They have never been prosecuted for those crimes. So why then would the families of the victims consider that this is peace, that they now have a good result from the Good Friday Agreement? In addition to those unprosecuted crimes, then there is the ongoing torture in McGabbery Prison, the framing of the Craig Avon II, Brendan McConville and John Paul Wooten, and the listing of people, or the arrest, random arrests at will by the same corrupt RUC, now PSNI. So I must say that while the homicide rates did peak in 1972 at 472 murders and had dropped to 69 murders in 1984, that's a sharp decline. There'd be no reason to say that decline would not continue. But that drop to from 472 to 69 had occurred 14 years before the 1998 Good Friday Agreement. So the notion of peace should not be attributed to the Good Friday Agreement.
Well, it wasn't attributed to that. What I was suggesting, Chris, was that regardless as to how it came about, that once that, and I'm not even using the term peace, how about a cease of active hostile aggression? Maybe that's a better term. But once that those hostilities ceased, that the general population of this island got used to and is now hopefully very used to living calmer, more peaceful lives with less violence, no bombs going off on the streets.
But that had occurred 14 years prior to the Good Friday Agreement.
Absolutely, which is why I'm saying I'm not attributing anything to the Good Friday Agreement.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So, what I'm saying is that since, you know, an extended period of time has elapsed where we've had, I'm going to use the term, as you say, not relative peace, but I suppose no hostilities, no active hostilities, as in people being killed and bombs,
well,
etc.
Well, I consider torture and arbitrary arrests and frame-ups, I consider that aggression and crime. And I don't see any reason why the people who know that that's going on around them,
I would too.
They should acquiesce to it.
I would too, and I'm not saying in that regard. What I'm saying is, I suppose, is open, active hostile, you know, public hostility. They're kind of covert activities, which, again, they are absolutely despicable. No government, as far as I'm concerned, has the right to keep one single secret from any of its so-called people. And I think the moment the government tells or informs its so-called citizenry, oh, we can't tell you that, that's a secret. As far as I'm concerned, the very moment that happens, they have ceased to be a government and they have simply become a dictator. The dictatorship of some form or other.
And Vincent, what's going to happen if Arlene Foster says, oh, we're staying in Europe, which they have done, and that they come into Europe, and then the Kenny will be the only provisional member of, they were all talking about, will be the only English-speaking, Ireland will be the only English-speaking country, the sovereign government in the state. That's what they were trying to tell us.
Well, I don't know.
And then the Kenny will be the only provisional member of a provisional government, which is not allowed to sit in Europe.
Well, I don't know if you heard. Did you hear Peter Sutherland's comments on the recent so-called Brexit? I have him here, and he mentioned a term, which of course I'm sure you'll find it bizarre. The term he mentioned was shared sovereignty. He said Ireland should respond to the UK's withdrawal from the EU by aligning itself more closely with the European, inverted commas, inner core, whatever that is. Maybe Peter Sutherland will enlighten us eventually.
Yes.
But, you know,
I may have even mentioned sovereignty because, as you know, for the last, I don't know how many years, it's only in the last couple of years that we start to mention sovereignty. And it's only this year that you hear all these politicians saying, oh, we're members of Dáil Éireann.
Well, they used to.
And that's an RTE, oh, Dáil Éireann. And well, we never heard it before.
From all the so-called national medias that we would hear on the internet, I'm going to say about 6 years ago, I think almost all of them, and check, folks, by all means, go and search some 6- and 7-year-old newspapers online, they're all available online to search, and type in the term sovereign debt and you'll get zero hits. Type in national debt and you'll get lots of hits. It was about 6 years ago, I think, that they changed that phrase. And it was like instantly every media outlet on the planet started to use the phrase sovereign debt only and no longer use the term national debt. And I found that very telling. Because we, of course, were talking to you, Billy, and others like you, who would have a broad intellectual capacity to understand the system's structure, etc. And they too realized this. They said, "Yeah, they've that term came out of nowhere." Now, of course, it didn't come out of nowhere. We know where it came from, but suddenly everything became sovereign debt. American, you know, spokespersons would be talking about defending American sovereignty here and there and everywhere. And, you know, we were busy, as you know, on the radio here saying to people, there's something wrong. They're using this term and they know they're not sovereign entities. Why are they using this term? They know they don't even represent a purported sovereign entity even. And yet here they are using this term to confound and confuse and obfuscate. It's an you know, and I've often wondered, you know, is it a case that, you know, are we, I mean, I hate to say it, but are we 50 years away? Are we 100 years away? Are we 10 years away from, you know, en masse from realizing not just that we've been lied to, I think everybody realizes we've been lied to, but the significance and the subtle power of the lie, because the lies are subtle, and that's what made them so powerful, I think, that they're not, they are brash and glaring to those who have studied and who have a comprehension. But to new, people who are new to looking at this and thinking about this, or maybe people who aren't even looking at it at all, but who've, you know, they're sitting there thinking, there's definitely something amiss. I can't quite put my finger on it. But, you know, there's definitely something wrong. I mean, even at the greatest stretch of the imagination, assuming a democracy of sorts could work correctly in Ireland, England, etc. Who could possibly imagine a democratic process can happen in Brussels from, you know, for all these other nations where unnamed people making unknown decisions in secret behind closed doors that can affect how long your grass can be in your front garden. In fact, even if you're allowed to have grass in your front garden, unless it's genetically modified grass.
We do know that so-called ruling from a distance always works in favor of the ruler and against the people, and that imbalance is in direct proportion to the distance of the people from the ruler.
Yeah, and the so media
the,
seems
the near
to,
one is to the near one is to self government, that your own neighbors should be running your community. The better democracy we have, the better system we have. The more distant it is, the more negative it is.
And the mainstream media seems to be nothing but a tool, an apologetic styled tool for these despots. You know, I've regularly heard them, you know, make passing apologetic remarks on their behalf of these crazed individuals. And I think what is even more despicable about the European Union control mechanism is that they purposely seem to be seeking out individuals who have no, from what I can tell, no trace of empathy in them. You know, whatever happened to mankind seeking leaders, spiritual leaders, and, you know, even, you know, community leaders based on their abilities, their integrity, their dignity, their intelligence, their acumen. And we have been seeking out sociopathic, narcissistic, psychopathic leaders, and that's what we are electing. I don't mean you and I, obviously, but en masse, that is who is getting elected, and we are selecting them.
It's astonishing. By the way, well, there's one other element there where a cleaning has to be done, and that's in Ireland's academia. Revisionism is ordinarily a good word in history, historiography, but revisionism in Ireland is a reversal of everything that was decent about the Ireland's freedom and has turned things on its head, making Britain seem to be the only rational source of governance in the area.
Yeah, and you see, I've never been politically active, and I've never been interested in becoming politically active, and I still have no interest in becoming politically active. I only studied politics from a distance. I just wanted to kind of figure out the struggle, like, what's the whole purpose of politics? Because as I looked at it, I realized, I suppose because I was lucky enough never to get involved, it's just like sport, football, I don't watch football either. Which is why, you know, when two teams play a match, there was a match today apparently, I didn't even know it was on until afterwards, somebody asked me what was the score, and I looked at them blankly, you know, score? What are you talking about? And I suddenly sprang two heads.
I'm going to interject here for a second and tell you a brief joke.
Okay.
Someone once asked the man in Nazarene in Africa, how did he manage to become a world-class organist, a doctor, treating the poor, a philanthropist? You know who I'm talking about. He lived in Africa his whole adult life. He was from Switzerland, I think. But when he was asked, how did you accomplish all these tremendous achievements in your lifetime? And he said, well, I never followed sports.
That would do it. That would do it. You see, I mean, I'm of the opinion that football is a disease of the knee.
All artists are now gone. But listen, the important point, I think, that people, and until we said about, you never heard about sovereignty, people didn't know the difference between sovereignty and royalty. And I think that is what people are now beginning to understand.
Well, you see, and again, I have to give credit where it's due there, because that came to me from Harry O'Reilly, Billy, even before I interviewed you, and I was astounded that night, but Harry was always saying to me, no, and he would keep explaining to me, that's what royalty is, and this is what sovereignty is.
Absolutely.
And it opened my eyes so wide. It really did. And that's, I just can't encourage people enough to go and say, don't take Billy Maguire's word for it. Don't take Chris Forbury's word for it. Don't take my word for it. Go and read the material.
The other thing today is those courts. And as you know, and we mentioned earlier about the Bible, when you go into court, you have to put your hand on the Bible and you swear an oath in that court. And most people don't even know. It could be any old book or any old thing, because no one knows what they're doing. And I think you said to me, Vincent, that now you don't go into court and swear on the Bible anymore. You have to do it in your solicitor's office by affidavit.
Well, this
but
is what
I'm
they're doing, yes.
The citizens, what you must do is ask the judge to read out Colossians, chapter 2, verse 9, the sovereignty of God and the sovereignty of man and the sovereignty of Christ. Because if you're using the Bible, I mean, they're only using the Bible instead of, that's a sacred book of, you know, going back to telling us where all this comes from. And I think it's scandalous to think that people are brought in, losing their houses, and these judges and court clerks, they should be, the first thing you should be asked, would you kindly read out that section of the Bible? Where I'm not putting my hand on that Bible until you read that out.
What section did you say, Billy?
The Bible and take the whole thing for granted. And I'm asking people, when you go into court, don't give the judge jurisdiction over you. And ask him to read out that section from the Bible.
Say that to me again. Colossians.
Colossians. It's, you go into the Bible, and it's Paul, and it is chapter 2, verse 9. And it's the sovereignty. It tells you where the sovereignty of God comes from, the sovereignty of man comes from, and the sovereignty of Christ comes from. And that was Paul in 58, I believe, around that. And that was a city, and that was the Hebrew people and the Christian people living side by side.
As a matter of fact, it's also pronounced Galatia, and in near the Black Sea, and that is thought to be where the Irish once came from before they came across through Galicia in Spain.
Well, that would make sense, because it's terrible hot there, and you can't get a decent pint.
Well, as long as it isn't Guinness's with our sovereign seal on it, I don't mind.
Yeah.
Well,
that's a new joke. But the point is that, look, we have a wonderful country. If we only had that sovereign government by the will of all the people, that those misfortunes went out and gave their lives for in the 1980s.
Exactly.
That's all
we want to be able
to go to Europe and say, look, we have a sovereign government by the will of all the people. And that's what we have. And I heard them talking about Britain. They were talking about that David Cameron said, we must comply with the will of the British people. And what about Lisbon Treaty? We had to go out and vote again.
Exactly.
Well, I'll just read you this because this was quite bizarre. I came across this in The Independent. And this was published on the 23rd of the 6th, which was, I think it was Wednesday gone, yeah? Thursday gone, pardon me. And I read the headline on this article, and I had to stop. The headline reads, Judge dismisses ATM, that's a cash machine, theft case, as state failed to technically prove bank existed. Yeah, and it was, that's a bizarre headline, right? And it definitely grabbed my attention.
Yeah.
And down through the article, it says there was evidence of various entities associated with it was Ulster Bank, but there was no documentary proof of a properly incorporated legal entity called Ulster Bank Ireland Limited put before the jury, he said. So, in other words, what he said was, essentially, there's no such individual, man or woman, there's no such thing as Ulster Bank Limited, or at least that's the best. And what I'll do is I'll actually send a copy of that link. But it's bizarre that they essentially, in a courtroom, have said, in Ireland, there's no such thing as a, in other words, there's nobody this man could have injured by stealing from, because essentially, who did he steal from? That there's no evidence.
About 100 years ago, since corporations were made persons, legal persons in the United States, maybe they're not legal persons in Ireland.
Well, here's what's happening. Now they've changed. Ulster Bank, quite recently, have changed their status, apparently, from a limited liability company, and they've now become what they call a DAC. I'd have to double check what DAC stands for. Ulster Bank DAC. Let me just see if I can Google that up. And DAC.
Do they have a license to trade? Is the thing I would like to know. Not one of those corporations have a license. I think it's unbelievable that they can carry on business here and no one ever checks them. Where's RTE's license? I asked RTE to show the license that they have. They're always looking for license fees and everything else. They couldn't show it because they don't have.
There we go. Sorry, I found it.
They come back to everybody's house.
So here's the interesting thing about this, Billy and Chris. Both of you would probably find this interesting. So Ulster Bank Ireland has now changed to a DAC, which stands for Designated Activity Company. And what it means, apparently, in legal mumbo-jumbo, is they have done away with, somehow, what was known as the ultra vires rule. The ultra vires rule was that if you try to do something ultra vires, essentially what you're doing is you're doing something beyond your power and scope. And in other words, you don't have the ability to do such a thing, whatever it may be, or to not refrain from doing such a thing. And DACs, apparently, are now legally, as it were, in mumbo jumbo land, capable, essentially, of being living entities. It's like they're now saying that companies with this DAC denotation are effectively living, breathing entities, which is, I find,
and
completely
DAC
bizarre.
Again?
DAC, Designated Activity Company.
Oh, yeah.
Now, this, as I said, this only happened a couple of weeks ago, I think, less than a fortnight ago, I think, up in the correction, that Ulster Bank switched. And then I saw this case in the papers, you see, and I thought, I wonder, are the two linked? But it is a bizarre ruling that, I mean, the guy, because I don't think the guy is denying he stole anything, and yet still, he didn't have the cash in his account, seemingly, and he had multiple withdrawals of €13,600, seemingly, up to the tune. I think there was multiple. I think it was up to the tune of 48,000 or something like that. I could be wrong. And yet, you know, I think he went in and held his hands up and said, "Yep, I did it," and the case still gets dismissed because Ulster Bank does not exist. How bizarre is that?
Yeah.
You see, what I find interesting about this and cases like this should be demonstrating to anybody with an active, intelligent, intact intellect that not only are banks not real, they were never real. And that literally this should be steering us back to realizing that actual crime is only when another individual is hurt, injured, killed, maimed, etc., by another individual. And that, you know, fraud, etc., of course, that exists too. But I mean, humanity needs to start addressing physical crime against one another with more relevance and seriousness than this so-called blue-collar crime of moving a few pieces of paper. And yes, we should be able to say those credits or whatever, you're not entitled to them, and we're removing them from you. You fraudulently obtained them, etc. And sure, there should be penalties in place for that. But I prefer the loss of your own assets. I would rather see people lose their assets than be put in a cage. I would rather see people's assets be sold to compensate their victims rather than put them in a jail cell, because we have to pay collectively to put them in a jail cell. So I would
it's about 175 years ago, approximately, when corporations were first permitted to exist in the United States.
Correct.
And each year, in order to be okayed for the following year, they would have to describe the good they had done to the country and the community.
And the same thing was supposed to happen on the 24th of January every year in the Mansion House in Dublin. And Billy would tell you exactly that, what was supposed to happen.
The license is only legal, valid and bona fides from the 21st of January to the 20th of January each and every year. It returns to the sovereign government of Dáileann and to the sovereign citizens of Éire.
Exactly. There's a fantastic documentary on YouTube called The Corporation. And it explains exactly that, what you just said, Chris. Not only that, American corporations, when they were formed after the year license could transfer over for a year, but they were only allowed seemingly exist for 25 years. Then they had to dissolve them. And then eventually what happened was corporations were given the ability to live, inverted commas, to exist, if you will, perpetually, forever. And that was the downfall of mankind right there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
Because,
and Chris, can you tell us that, Vice President Finden, who was here for the weekend and for the week, why didn't he attend the James Stevens and John O'Mahony graves in Glasnevin? Why did he snub the Irish and Fenian Republican Brotherhood? And why does the American ambassador... we invited him to the 21st of January, and we hadn't been invited to one commemoration. And you'd think that when he'd come, he'd go to Glasnevin, where James Stevens and John O'Mahony are buried in two beautiful graves.
Well, to try to convert Clinton is a little bit like complaining to Hitler about the abuses of the Nazis. He was a key player among them. He's the one who led the United States and much of the Western world into the corporate takeover. He and his wife, and it has accelerated since then. So we're in a real mess. By the way, how's the water scheme going on in Ireland now?
Oh, that's pretty much decimated.
Trouble over the whole thing.
The water deal is pretty much decimated, and now they're moving on to your wheelie bin, apparently, Billy. They're going to have a weighing scales on your wheelie bin. Did you know that one?
No, I didn't.
Yes, it's coming. Just a comment in the chat box there. Somebody asked in relation to mathematically perfected economy, saying that it resolves all of this, and how do Billy and Chris feel about mathematically perfected economy? I don't know how up to speed you are on that. I did mention before, though, Billy, when I was reading that book, that wonderful book you recommended, Bulmer Hobson, No Ireland Yesterday and Tomorrow by Bulmer Hobson.
Yeah.
And in that book, and Jason Daly, if you haven't read it, this is the Jason in the chat box, if you haven't read that book, please go and read it, the relevant sections on finance, and you will find, essentially, Bulmer Hobson didn't have the same wording at the time, and I think he was an old man at the time, and he was blind in one eye,
and his eyesight was very, very poor.
What was incredible was he was describing a mathematically perfected economy in broad language, very broad. But if you read it carefully, I think you'll see it in there. And that was the finance structure he was saying, which was intended for the Sovereign Republic of Éire.
Absolutely.
So we could perform financial transactions with one another with no remainder. Because that's what's happening. If I go into your business, Chris, or you come to mine, or if I buy your book, which everybody should, by the way, Chris Fogarty's excellent books, we'll give a link to them in a sec. But if I buy your book, Chris, I can't just privately buy your book. I have to go and pay a tribute, as it were, to this other entity. They didn't write the book. They didn't print the book. They didn't ship the book.
Yeah.
And I'm the one who's going to read the book. And yet you and I are both at a loss to this other entity. And we've just supposedly we should just trust that, you know, they're taking our money and, you know, it's okay. They're looking after it and, you know, honest, they're doing a good job. But we can't ask, we can't find out where they're doing it, and then we discover they seem to be committing horrific war crimes all across the planet with the funding they're getting from this.
Yeah.
And it's just bizarre. I see, again, I'm in a strange mood tonight because I find it all just so bizarre that, you know, that I've come into
it. It might have reached a tipping point now. This might be the tipping point.
I hope so.
Trump supporters in the States tells the world, I think, that the people in the States have gone insane because of their anger and disgust. And I just hope it isn't made worse by the whole setup. But Clinton is, as I mentioned to many people, Trump, we fear that he might be a genocidist. We don't know what he's capable of doing, what crimes he's capable of committing.
Well, I will say this.
Clinton's crimes are already a matter of record.
I think that's a fair point. I would also suggest anybody who watched Trump do your whole, your fired routine in The Apprentice, I think, you know, the persona he's presenting to the public now, I think he would like everybody to think that it's the same persona he had in The Apprentice, and it is not. The persona he had in The Apprentice when he was making those cool, callous, carefully calculated, definitive business decisions to just look at somebody and go, you're fired, he would equally do so to an entire nation of people to say, he would sit around the table with his advisors and say, okay, so are you telling me those people are no good, they have to go? And if they say, well, yes, Mr. President, right. Get rid of him. He would do it in a heartbeat.
That's what we're afraid of. Yeah, that is what we're afraid of. But that is what Hillary Clinton has already done, you see.
I would agree with that too. And I would go even further and say, which is why, you know, when are the American people going to realize what type of country do you have if that's your choice and you only have a choice between those two? Essentially, Bernie is out now, I believe, isn't he? Essentially, Bernie Sanders is out of the race.
Yes, he's essentially out, and that's a pity. Yeah, it is a major pity.
But, you see, I feel Bernie Sanders was put in there up to a point. I think they'd always intended it to come down to Trump, Clinton. Because it's the difference between the devil and the deep blue sea, isn't it? The American people now essentially can't win no matter what.
That's where we are.
And I was no Bernie Sanders supporter, I can assure you. I was no socialist in my thinking. Socialism, yeah. I think, go look at the countries who've had socialism in place, folks, and I don't think you'll agree with it afterwards either.
That's right.
So, you know, I mean, that was the difference between a people living on a little island 100 years ago who strove to recognize the sovereignty, not just of each other, but of every single man and woman on the entire planet. And that's why the power, the so-called, and I know you hate the term power elite, but the power elite controllers at the time, that's why they so violently and definitively attempted to put down what happened here in Ireland. That's why they tried to disguise their history.
It's comical to see for the last few months, the Irish news media referring to the destruction of Dublin. You'd think that it was the IRA that bombarded central Dublin from the warship Helga in the River Liffey.
Essentially what they're saying is, oh, those naughty rebellious men and women, had they not been there, the British warship wouldn't have had to blow the shit out of Dublin. But it's their fault. It's not the guy who loaded all the munitions into the ship and pulled the trigger. Can't possibly be his fault, right?
right.
It's crazy. It is crazy. Chris, your website, please, if you don't mind. Just call out your...
Website is www.irishholocaust.org. .org.
And is there a link to your book there as well?
And the book can be bought... from John Robinson in Dublin. Do you have his number there somewhere?
Yes.
Maybe you can dig it out.
The Irish Republican Brotherhood and the Fenian Republican Brotherhood. You know, John is, and he's a one, he's, I must pay tribute to John. He's a wonderful secretary.
Is it okay to give out John's number on air, or? No, maybe not. Okay. Well, we let John decide whether he wants his number broadcast, I suppose. Because once, as I said on the internet, Billy, once it's out on the internet, Billy, it stays out. You see, this is the thing. So,
yeah,
it's a good thing in many regards.
You can always see it, I think, on the Billy Maguire website. Is that right?
Yeah, BillyMaguire.com or IrishRepublicanBrother.ie. I'm sure they. I don't know. I've done it. Yeah. They've taken my broadband. They've taken my landline. They've done everything. I'm not allowed to speak on the radio. I'm not allowed to be interviewed by any journalists. I'm not, you know, I don't exist. The Irish Republican Brotherhood, did you not know? We don't exist anymore.
Well, that's why I would like to reiterate here and now, Billy, that, you know, as you know, I've had to take a lot of flack down through the years just for being willing to speak to you live like this, and Chris as well.
I'm sorry about that, Vincent, but I mean, that was the way it was.
Well, that's why, I mean, I always try to remain impartial as best I can, because these are emotive issues, and you know, I do believe that somebody who's in the position I'm in as an interviewer and presenting as I do, I always try to maintain an impartiality as best I can. It's very difficult sometimes, I don't mind saying it.
Yeah.
But I think it is important that, you know, that I try to not sway the whoever I'm interviewing or discuss, you know. So, but what I would say is, I would encourage anybody from the mainstream media and anybody who's willing to interview Chris Fogarty or Billy Maguire, can we have it on record, guys, that you are both absolutely willing to do so?
Yes, indeed. Indeed.
You know, the very important point that I made on as you know, I gave the oration on Easter Monday at the GPO, and, you know, I said, and I've quoted there tonight, that we have five governments, and I have said, aren't we lucky to have five governments? We have a sovereign government by the will of all the people. There's Britain. It's in trouble because it only has a royal government, which isn't a sovereign government, they pretend it is, and you know how important that is. We should be the best governed state in the world, and instead of that, we're the worst.
You see, this is why, Billy, for example, sorry, I just cut across there for a second, I apologise, but I'd say why I was saying what I was saying just previously, is that the mainstream media aren't willing to interview you or Chris Fogarty, for example, the way they used to, perhaps. And so I would like to put it out there, there are thousands of other internet radio stations just like this, just like People's Internet Radio, and I would encourage them to get in contact if they wish to interview you or Chris Fogarty or anybody else we've had on as a guest. We would more than happily pass on contact details, and that you are willing to go and interview with them, because believe it or not, here's the way the internet works, it's bizarre. We could do 30 interviews in a row, and they might get small sharing, or some might get large share. We've no way of knowing what captivates people's attention, really, because we don't actively go to try and, you know, seek to captivate attention the way the mainstream media does with the shock and the horror and all that type of stuff. We try to present logic and reason, and it seems that that's a small audience, but growing. And it's the freedom of the internet. I mean, there are some fantastic American internet radios out there, Chris and Billy, that I'm sure would be delighted to have you on as guests. In fact, Billy, you've been on American Freedom Radio, which is an internet station.
Indeed, with Stephen.
Absolutely. And maybe Chris might consider that as well.
What I'm saying, Vincent, is, the Irish Republican Brotherhood, we abhor war. We abhor violence, corruption, maladministration, propaganda, lies and deception. Sovereign citizens don't live like that. And we're not a political party. We have no arms. We've got nothing. We don't have any money. And all we want to do is...
That's true. I'm broke. I said, that's true. I'm broke.
but I mean, all we're doing is giving the information.
Well, as they say, as my father say, but it keeps me honest.
By the way, regarding broke, I'd just like to mention that during the week, Governor Rauner of the state of Illinois has suggested that the Chicago public school system go bankrupt.
Really? The public school system? Yes. And then what's supposed to happen, Chris?
We're looking at it right now. My wife Mary and I are on the board of an alternative high school system. We just had 140 graduates last week, and there's about 800 students. And these are schools mostly, almost entirely African-American students from between 17 years of age and 24 who are dropouts from the system. They're the ones who fell between the cracks and were abandoned. But they're able to make a comeback and get an education and get placed into a college after they do some learning and pass some tests. So it's a wonderful thing, but within a week or two of bankruptcy also, I'm sorry to say. And there'll be 800 young people on the streets and 130 teachers and others out of work.
Wow.
And that's just our little section of it. The entire Chicago public school system, with tens of thousands of teachers and hundreds of thousands of children, they're facing. So what you know is going on in Ireland, it happens to be an international event.
It is.
Again,
plus,
created by the banksters, but they're wiping out the governments across the world.
And when you reflect
right now,
when you reflect that, Chris, against the price of a missile, you are a drone, for example, used to kill somebody living in a tent on the far side
exactly.
of the planet. And you have all these people at home in your so-called homeland who have been, essentially they've been deselected for education. And I don't think they've been, it's not so much in a racist manner as they've just said, we're deselecting you in part. It's not, the opposite of love is not hate. It's,
apathy.
Apathy. Yeah, it's, You neither care nor discuss. It's just, as I said,
yeah.
Donald Trump. Are they irrelevant? Yeah, well, wipe them out.
Yeah.
This attitude.
Yeah.
Don't be bothering me with
That's
the details. Go, you know, wipe them out. And the
yes.
suggestion, of course, that's come true, and I'm delighted to see it's come true in the chat box from Creditor, for homeschooling. Is it possible maybe to set up a co-op for homeschooling, or should maybe those people start looking at that, because they will get a much higher level of education if they decide to homeschool
yes.
with each other?
Yes, well said, indeed.
I mean, I have spoken.
This group that we're with was founded by Franciscan nuns about 50 years ago, and they were with it until they died, and then now it's pretty much in others, other people's hands. And Mary and I are volunteers to it, donors to it, volunteers, and we're really proud to be part of it, but things are coming to an end, it appears. But also is the entire school system of the city of Chicago.
Well,
these are strange times.
They are indeed. And I don't know if you've spoken to many homeschooled children, because of the nature of what we do here on People's Internet Radio. We know a lot of people who have homeschooled their children, and on occasion, you know, at gatherings, etc., we get to meet them. And every homeschooled child I've met so far have been incredible. Their ability to converse, and their vocabulary,
yes.
and their acumen, and their sharpness in general, and their keenness to engage in conversation
yes.
is
yes.
exponentially greater than the average child you see come out of public
yes.
schools.
And Chris, isn't Mary still Secretary of Friends of Irish Freedom in America?
Of the Chicago branch.
Oh, the Chicago branch. As you know, James McGuire was chairman of the Friends of Irish Freedom that collected all the money. It was all misappropriated and set up Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael.
That's the money. It was only after De Valera collected those millions of dollars that he showed his true colors in Ireland.
And that money was collected for the Irish and Fenian Republic of Brotherhood.
Was this the money, Billy, that was used to set up the Irish press?
Yeah.
And I recall, correct me if I'm wrong, but they had two types of shares in the company. They had A shares and B shares. And De Valera and his family, etc., and his cronies, they had the B shares, and everybody else had the A shares, thinking they were the important ones, but they pulled another fast one. It was the B shares that were the significant ones. So everybody who had A shares lost their shirt.
Another one, that money was set up, you know, for... I said on the 21st of January, all the institutions of the state were up and running. But the money was, that's where the money was for and was collected in America. And that's really what caused, you know, the rift and the split in the Irish Republican Brotherhood. And it caused awful hardship here. And, you know, the founding of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael.
Well, have either of you, I think you've read it, Billy. I don't know if Chris has. You've read, John, Jay Churi's book, De Valera, England's Greatest Spy. Have you?
Yes.
Oh, you've read it too, Chris. Well, a number of years ago, I think 5 or 6 years ago, I did an interview with John Turry. And I had a technical issue at the time, and I couldn't find... basically, I had that many files, so I lost it. But I would like to announce tonight to everybody, I have found it again. I have the recording.
Oh!
And I'm going to have it edited, hopefully, for the middle of the week. And I'm going to put that up, because that's an essential interview. I think everybody should listen to John Turry's own words on De Valera, because he was astounding. John Turry was.
He was 30 years, wasn't he, at the time? He was.
I don't know how he is now.
I spoke to him a few times on the phone. You know, we were in contact. I don't know what happened to him after that. But he was so interested in all that. And De Valera.
Well, again, the man's mind, Billy, came true. That his sharpness of mind, he absolutely, I believe he absolutely proves 100% in that book that what he states is true.
Oh, I absolutely.
Well, I must say that I'm of the opinion that Father Brian Murphy's book, Patrick Pearse and the Lost Republican Ideal, makes the case even more strongly.
Oh, well, okay.
Well, you can't get that book. That's the awful thing about it. I have tried to get, and I went to school in that store, and I tried to get that book, and there's no way you can get it. I went around. I think they're not allowing it to be published. There's no way you can get that book.
That's not uncommon.
I bought about 30 copies, and I brought them over here and distributed them around among people I thought should have them. But I have one copy left myself. But it makes the case against both De Valera and Collins. They didn't sell out together. They sold out a year or so apart.
Absolutely. And you know, all those, the sad thing for me is that my family, you know, we bought Vaughan's Hotel to set up the Sovereign Republic of Ireland's Dáilíre government, and which they did. We did. And we put our hand in our pocket too to do it.
You see, I can't help but wonder, Billy, that, you know, if people clearly understood the concept of sovereignty, the concept and structure of a sovereign government, they would be able to look, as I did, at the conduct and the deals, the so-called Anglo-Irish Treaty, for example, and look at that and say, how on earth can that possibly be a legitimate treaty under international law unless the Crown is willing to state who was on the other side of that table exactly? Because either they were from the Sovereign Republic of Ireland, which they claimed, the Crown claimed they were not, or they were considered subjects of the Crown, which essentially is what they were, considered by the Crown. And in which case, then how can it be an international treaty and have any recognition as such? Because the Crown cannot treaty with its subjects. It's impossible.
And that's it. Absolutely, because you're on the ball. And King George V, his biggest problem in July 1919, where was he getting his sovereignty from? And he was getting it, he claimed, it comes from God, but it's from the heart. And that's why it's up in the coat of arms, the Crown of England. And he had all these huge difficulties with all these countries. And that was the basis of the Civil War. And I think it is about time. And I mean, I am treated today by Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, as they did in the Civil War, as you know. And I think it's disgraceful. They've never come. And yet they're shouting, oh, we're Dáilíre. They've never come to the Mansion House on the 21st of January. I told you, they do awful dirty tricks to us. They refuse to clean Vaughan's Hotel, where the stage was founded for Easter Monday. And that's our tricolour flag. They put a gold braiding around it. When I complained about Michael D. Higgins taking, Michael D. Higgins doesn't believe in God. And there he is. How could he take an oath to the president?
I went and double treble checked that, Billy. Apparently, he was claiming to be, and what's his name from Labour, the guy with the glasses, with what was his name? Oh, I've lost the name. Anyway, but he was claimed to be agnostic. Now, I don't know whether an agnostic... I've looked up clearly. I said, well, I'll go look up the definition. What's the precise definition of someone who claims to be agnostic? And he either, to take that oath, and I made the point on a few places, to take the oath to enter into a presidential office in that regard, even if it is under a false pretense state, as it were. But there's a legal requirement laid down in the 37 Constitution that he has to say in the presence of Almighty God. Now, it begs the question, how can an agnostic say that term and not be either lying or have become a believer? You either now have to claim to be a believer and that you accept God, or if you wish to maintain your agnostic, which is saying, well, I don't know. Agnosticism is saying, well, I don't know if there is and I don't know if there isn't. But there's a definitive legal requirement that you say in the presence of Almighty God, not perhaps in the presence of Almighty God, it's in the presence. So, you know, essentially, he either lied to get into office, in which case, well, that's impeachment, right, and treason, or supposedly he is no longer an agnostic. Now, I've looked and looked to see if anybody has him on record or asked the question since, and of course, nobody has. But I think somebody should ask that question. I think that question needs asking, people, and I'm talking to the audience here. It's easy to ring the houses of the Oireachtas. It's easy to ring Leinster House. It's easy to ring Áras an Uachtaráin, as they call it, in the Phoenix Park, and ask the question. It's not difficult. And I would encourage people to ask that question.
Absolutely. And when you're asking that, you're asking, why did they put the gold braiding, the admiralty, British admiralty, gold braiding around our tricolour flag and pretend when they went off to Windsor? And I complained about it, and I was told, we didn't take the Irish Republican Brotherhood's tricolour flag. We took a four colour. Would that happen in any other country in the world? Yep. They're going off out of Europe now with our tricolour flag, and Michael D. Higgins, all those commemorations, they were reading our proclamation and using our tricolour flag, and were we invited? Were we asked? There's a protocol for that tricolour flag. You know, that was taken down by Dermot Lynch and brought up under those tunnels to Vaughan's Hotel. That's why those tunnels are so important. And what's important is that, you know, the escape plan, which is in the Vaughan's Hotel papers, from the GPO in 1916, was up Moore Street. That's the reason. They weren't going up Moore Street to buy fruit. They were going up to go down those tunnels, which are at the rotunda, which Bartle Darcy has opened up. And credit to Bartle Darcy for opening them up. And the Crown forces cut them off there. And why aren't they told that? If they had gone down those tunnels, they would have escaped to all the safe houses. And they're the facts of the matter.
Well, gentlemen.
Vince, regarding the Bible, you remind me, when I was in the American Army, it didn't seem appropriate for me to have a Bible in a footlocker as a soldier. And so I didn't have one there. But I was told I had better put some kind of a holy book in there, some kind of a Bible.
Right.
And so I got being in the Army, I thought I put in the shooter's Bible by Sears Roebuck, a list of rifles they had for sale.
But what about a judge recently and in court, and he, I told you, you know, the story about you have to put your hand in the Bible, you have to do it in the solicitor's office, I'm told now, and an affidavit. But I'm asking everybody to read that section of the Bible. But he said, the judge apparently said that you have to have a Quran in court now.
No, what they've done is all the solicitors, or anybody, a commissioner for oaths, etc., they have to have a Bible. Well, it's slightly different. For Christians, they're told New Testament. For Jewish people, Talmud, Old Testament. And then for Muslims, etc., they have to have a Quran available at all times. People don't realise when you go into court, even if it's a jury trial or whatever, and you have to swear in, that you're not given the Bible. If you're Christian, you're only given the New Testament. That's only half the Bible, folks. You know, people don't know that. And if you're Jewish, you're given the other half. You see? Because what's happening is, but the importance is, Billy, is the why. And the why is, it's essentially a different contract. These things are all essentially contracts. And there's a different contract happening.
Yeah, by the way, the pursuit of Noonan as to his religious faith, I don't think that will benefit the cause in much of a way, because too many people have too many shades of faith.
Yeah, no, it was Eamon Gilmore. Eamon Gilmore was the other one who claimed to be agnostic that I was talking about. Eamon Gilmore.
Michael Gilmore, I see.
Yeah, yeah.
Michael Higgins is president.
But I think maybe that should be let go, because it won't lead to anything, any benefit, I think, to the general cause.
Gentlemen, we've hit midnight, so it's time for me to sign off, even though I was late starting, but it's been an absolute pleasure and an education, as always, talking to you again, and I can't wait to do so again. I would encourage any other internet radio who are listening or are involved, by all means, please interview Billy McGuire and Chris Fogarty. Ask them any question you like. They are the most open and honest people you'll ever interview. They have never, ever once tried to sidestep or evade a question that I can recall. Ever. And that's, to me, that's a sign of a man with integrity, dignity, and honesty, and somebody who is actually knowledgeable on their subject matter. So I just want to, from me to you.
There's a lot that I don't know, but go ahead.
Well, I just want to say, as always.
One thing I would say about the Irish Republic of Brotherhood, we all, any letter that has a sovereign seal up with it, they belong. That's why I read out to Arlene Foster's letter to see. We put them up on the website for you to look at. We don't cover up anything.
No, it's for the people to choose the education, really. They must choose it, seek it out, find it out.
That's the point, and that's all we do, just giving the information.
Well, listen, I have to release the stream.
Thank you both very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chris.
And
thank
I'll talk to you again soon. Good night, folks. God bless. And that's it from me for tonight, folks. As I say, very sorry I was late. I didn't even get to mention so far, because the conversation was so intense, that tonight was the People's Internet Radio fundraiser in Galway. It was in, what the hell is the name of the place? I forgot. Of course, isn't there a big poster under the thing? I was supposed to get there. I didn't. I got delayed. I was doing something myself. It was in Kennedy's Bar, Air Square, Galway. It's probably still raving as we speak. Hopefully it is. Sean McGuire done an incredible work, and other guys getting involved. I hope it went well. I don't know. I tried to get there. I couldn't. I barely got home, as you know, for radio tonight. I've had certain things happen, family, private matters, etc. I've had a lot to deal with. I should have been triplets, as I've said before. But I really hope it went well. I hope it was well supported. And even though it's probably over, and I know you can't go now, but if you still think we're worth it, if you think People's Internet Radio is worth supporting, we do have a donate button there. If you can, it's appreciated, as always. Thank you very much for tuning in. I really appreciate it. I'll be back with you next Sunday. Iwa, August Kulasov. God bless.